people ask me, well, do you paint for money? No, I do not paint for money. I paint for myself, but I sell for money. I sell my paintings for money, but I don't paint for money. I don't think about money. I don't worry about money. And it's not because I have money. It's because it's irrelevant to the art process.
Welcome to the Passionate Painter Podcast. I'm your host, Caroline Italia Carlson. Whether your art is a full-time career or your side gig, if you are passionate about creating art, this podcast is for you. Don't worry about taking notes. I'll do that for you. And you can find them at PassionatePainterPodcast.com. Welcome to part two of my interview in progress with internationally acclaimed painter, Mark Sciascia. If you haven't yet listened to episode one, you might want to go back and listen to that first to hear Mark's bio, tales from his adventurous career, his biggest fear, and his unique approach to commissions. You can find the audio for part one and the full video interview at PassionatePainterPodcast.com/episode 90. Don't forget to join my podcast Insider Circle for free downloadable ebooks, cheat sheets, and checklists exclusively for my podcast insiders and students. You'll also receive a reusable coupon for the lowest price available on all of my self-paced online courses. Sign up for free in the sidebar at PassionatePainterPodcast.com. Now, I do have one question about your interesting journey in which you got the Shining Star Award. It's your bio says for work with over 200,000 children.
Correct.
And that's an education award. So that's not
yes.
the book award.
Right.
How did you get that reach on that one?
Well, I am a performer. I don't know if you've picked this up yet. And what happens is when Night of the Moon Jellies, come back to this for a second. When Night of the Moon Jellies was published by Simon & Schuster in 1991, I guess, I immediately was invited to schools. People, teachers would say, oh, Mark, you're, and especially in my hometown. Oh, Mark, you went out in the world and made good. Why don't you come back to school and tell the kids about what you did and how did you get involved in publishing and how did you write stories and how did you do this? Well, twist my arm. Well, I was so excited. I went into, so what I would do is I'd go to, say, the Nathan Hale School in New London, Connecticut. And I had the whole day. And I don't know how many kids they had there. Let's say it's 500 kids. We would cordon off the library or the, you know, one of the big rooms and maybe the gym. And I would see them in segments of groups of, say, 75. Okay. And they would come in for an hour and I would just have them for an hour. I would read to them my book. I'd read my other book. I've written other books. I'd read stories that hadn't been published. I'd sing songs. I'd show them how I gave them an art lesson. I introduced them to the ideas of the Enlightenment. We talked about when art changed from being very gothic and flat to chiaroscuro. I mean, I did this with first and second graders. No problem. They got it. I talked to them about the magic trick of how to paint things and draw things to make them look 3D by using a trick that was invented 600 years ago, a trick that was so amazing that it launched the Renaissance. And of course, the trick, quote unquote, see, this is the performer in me. It was perspective. And so I did a demonstration of how to do perspective. I drew a barn. I put it in perspective. And, you know, there's this moment where it just looks like a kite on a piece of paper. And then you chop off the ends and erase stuff. And all of a sudden the barn appears. And oh my God, these kids would freak out. They'd be like, oh my God, Mrs. Swanson, did you see what Mark Sciascia did? You know, these kids ate it up.
Yes.
And I discovered that, and I did that, you know, my own kids. I did this with my own kids. I loved teaching kids and using. Trying to open up their minds to areas that they're going to revisit later, you know, and so I talked about the Enlightenment. I talked about perspective. I talked about the idea of, I covered a lot of ground and I did it with drawing. And I, anyway, I'm really going on and on, but the short of it is I did that in hundreds of schools.
I do it.
Oh, and another funny thing is I wore a yellow suit at every school. I had a yellow suit that I wore because when I started out, I was a little bit afraid that the children, I wouldn't hold their attention. And I thought if I wear a yellow suit, maybe at least they'll be like in awe of my yellow suit. So, you know, I bought some cheap $50 suit and I ended up wearing it to something like 210 schools and libraries. And I didn't do it all at once. I mean, I did it over a 10-year period. So from 1991 to about 1999, I guess, those were the years I went to schools.
Did you wear the suit for 10 years?
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. And I'm very proud. It still fits me. But the funny thing is, the kids never forgot it. I still get letters from kids. They loved it. And so one day in Connecticut, I got a phone call that a group from the Children's Museum of Southeastern Connecticut had selected me for an award for all my work with young people. And I've been lucky and I've had a lot of awards in my life. I got an award for my children's book for writing and illustrating it. I got a lot of awards for painting. The award that I am most proud of is the Shining Star Award from the Children's Museum of Southeastern Connecticut for what they wrote in it was for Mark Shosh's outstanding contribution to the education of young people. And really, it was, if you add up how many kids I saw all that time, it's about 200,000.
That's amazing.
So that's a little sandwich in there of my art life. And all that time, I somehow managed to still be in plays or do other things. I was raising my kids. I was a very, you know, I'm the guy that changed the diapers, took care of making food for the kids. And I took them to all the doctor's appointments. I did the dentists. I did the braces. Yeah. I was the guy that did that. But when the kids got old enough, oh man, I'm out of here. And I went and I pursued my thing. And my wife was semi-retired, I think about, and she's a glamorous star in her world. She rose to a huge height, became a vice president of marketing at Fidelity Investments. She was there for 22 years. I could tell you stories of the things she was invited to that we went to do, White House correspondence dinners, Time 100 parties, New York City, amazing. And it's all because I happened to marry this star. But when she retired, she took an early retirement and she's been my helper and my, so in other words, she's giving to me now what I gave to her years ago. She's helping me with my thing. She just sent me a note yesterday saying, Mark, you've got to get a painting out to the Oil Painters of America. And I would have forgotten this. I mean, I've got stuff all over the place, like sending, that's another thing I guess I should mention, marketing your work.
Yeah, that was actually my next question.
Okay,
so
well, let me,
go
you want to ask it the way you want to ask it?
Yeah, I was just going to ask how you recommend artists promote themselves and how you do your marketing, because that's a whole nother dimension of having an art career.
Right. If you don't have good work, don't market. I'm going to say that again. Don't try to sell your work if your work's not great. Wait until you get, let me back up a little bit because that didn't sound right. I want you to market yourself to your art association, build your life, make the art association part of your life and learn there, whether you're good or not, that doesn't matter. The art association is a very forgiving place. Lots of beginners there. It's a great place to get your foot in and start. And that's why I say the Art Association is kind of like your teddy bear. Get close to that. Now, when you decide to you're good enough and you're ready to go to galleries and stuff, well, then go to the galleries and try to be fearless about that. Don't be afraid. Your work doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be good for you. You feel good about it. You feel confident. You're ready to do this. And yeah, approach galleries. They're going to give you nothing but resistance. But staying on the Art Association for a second, when you do your solo show at the Art Association, invite all your friends, invite everyone you know who loves art, find people who might love art and send them an invitation. And I don't mean an email. I mean, get a postcard off in the mail. Do a postcard. Vistaprint has great deals on postcards. Yeah, the postage is going to cost you something, cost you more than the card sometimes, but you got to do some promotion with postcards. I have postcards that have my name right on the side. It always says Shasha, always, every postcard. This is great marketing. I'm very proud of my marketing. You see how it says Shasha on the side?
Yes.
Every postcard I send out has the same design, Shasha, and then the best picture that's going to be in my show. Then on the back, I always make sure that I have my website. So in addition to the address of the exhibition, I have the website so people can go to that. And markshasha.com, by the way.
Oh, yeah. That'll be in the show notes.
Yeah. And I also have a newsletter that I put out. But I'm not like a lot of artists. They want to throw out their newsletter they generate a new one every 2 weeks or something. Listen, if you can do that, good luck. I think people get tired of seeing your work, no matter how good you are, if you keep shoving it in their face. You have to calm down, think about it. I do 3 newsletters a year or 4 at the most, and I'm very careful with them. And I have a good, solid following. Very few people unsubscribe from my newsletter because I care about what I'm sending them. I want it to be beautiful, beautiful paintings. This is my series of beautiful paintings lately. This is what's on my website. This is the workshop I'm coming. You got to have information that people want. You know, my upcoming workshop, the latest video that I have, a latest book, a latest appearance in the media. You know, if I'm going to be on TV or even if I'm going to be in a play, I'll mention that. And I'll always link to videos that I have. There's so many on YouTube now. I don't even know. I can't keep track of them. And I'm not even generating them. There's other people that generate videos of my work now. And I'm fine with it. But I treat the people who buy my work like gold. I treasure them. I try to see them as real people, not buyers. They are people. You are connecting to them. They love your work because there's something in you that they're seeing. It's personal. Don't just treat them like a number or a name. These are people, and you are providing some joy to their life with your art, or they wouldn't be on your mailing list. So my advice is, when you market yourself, think about that and always put your best foot forward. Now, getting into galleries, it's been a long time since I knocked on the door of a gallery. I hated doing that because I knew they hate you. They hate you. As soon as they tell you you're an artist. Nice. The door is, did you come in that we get it? Just get out of here. They do not want to hear you. They don't want to hear you at all because they're always swatting artists away like flies, especially the big galleries that make big money. They just don't want to hear your sob stories and your, you know. So rather than do that, this is why I say the Art Association is your teddy bear. Go back to your teddy bear. Do your shows there until you're ready. And when you do your show there, invite the galleries that are local to you. Send them one of these and send them a nice note. Say, listen, I've got a show at the Dedham Art Association, and I'm really proud of it. And I think that my work might appeal to you and to your buyers. I'm serving wine.
There it is.
And you know, if you can really get this out of the Art Association, you're doing yourself a big favor, and the Art Association should accommodate somehow. Sometimes they're all volunteers. They can't do this, but if you can have a VIP night, say I do a show at the Marblehead Art Association, I always have a VIP night. If I have to, I'll hire someone to be there to help me close deals. But I get certain, you know, I'll let my collectors know. The people who have bought from me before are my collectors. I let them know I'm going to have a VIP night at the Art Association, and everything's going to be well lit, and we're going to have wine. And there's going to be some other stuff. And if you really want to get, and this is how I really launched, I got known for this. I don't do it anymore, but I used to have an unveiling where I would have a painting that was there on VIP night that no one had seen yet. And it would be on an easel and it would be wrapped in red velvet. And I would say, in about 15 minutes, I'm going to unveil this. So people come on in. This is my creme de la creme. This is my painting of the paintings. This is my favorite one. You didn't see it on the postcard, but it is, I think, one of my best paintings in the show. And I just wanted you all to, I wanted to share the experience of seeing your reaction to it. Here we go. And you raise the red velvet and oohs and ahs. And of course, somebody always buys it. And it's very exciting. I am a performer. And because I am a performer, this stuff comes very easy to me. And I have a lot of fun. It's pure joy. This is not hard for me to come up with this stuff. And, I see life as a fun kind of a game, and it's joyful. And I didn't even mention, if you want a good website, go to Fazo.
That was my next question, is are you using Fazo?
Absolutely. Fazo is the best.
I want to switch to them. I got to get somebody from Fazo on the show. I want to switch to them, but I need to know if I can hook up my podcast to it, because I've got to have the flexibility to incorporate a podcast.
Well, talk to them. I think that chances are you're going to have a podcast lane and a website lane. And what you want to do is just first and foremost, most important, if you have a good website, and Fazo's beautiful yeah. website. Fazo has put the effort into making websites for artists that work for artists.
Yes.
So you're not, I don't know how to, the right metaphor, but it's just fabulous. Now, it helps with newsletters. It helps with blogs. You can make your newsletter a blog post. You can make your blog post a newsletter.
Or a podcast. I bet you I could just incorporate it into the blog.
Well, give them a call. You got to ask them that one. I don't do a podcast, so I don't know. But the other thing is Artwork Archive. Artwork Archive.
Yes, I love them too.
A very, very important place for serious artists. If you are serious about keeping an accurate inventory, an archive of all your work.
Yeah.
You want to get an Artwork Archive for that. And there's another nice feature that Artwork Archive can do for you. You can, let's say a gallery wants to see some of your work and they show some interest. You don't want to just say, okay, let me just bring in some random stuff. No. You want to show them a variety of stuff, ask them what they might like to see, and then say, I'm going to send you an email, which is a link to a room. It's a room. It's like a room is, it's basically it's almost like an interactive PDF file where the gallery can see a selection of your work and see what the prices are. Because you're not going to put prices on your website probably. And there's a reason for that. But if you have the prices in this thing and you're sending that off to the gallery so they get a sense of what you have, and also they can select which paintings they might want in the gallery and leave the other ones out. So you've got a way in without being a blunderbuss about it. You know, you've got a way of saying, look, you know, it's a soft sell. And if you're working with a gallery already, oh, this is just a dream. It's so easy. And Artwork Archive makes this more possible. It makes it simple. So I have a gallery on Nantucket, for example, Pierce Galleries, one of the best galleries in the whole world. They are a great gallery, and it's a thrill to be in there. But I can't just bring him anything. I can't just say, oh, here's some stuff lying around my studio. Let me send some work. No. It doesn't work that way. Your gallery is your partner. If your gallery doesn't like the idea of bringing a particular painting in, don't ever mention that painting again to them. It's just not worth it. You want to be their friend. You want to be the helper of the gallery. So the gallery says, well, you know, what do you have? Like lately, there's a certain series of paintings that they kind of have shown interest in. And I'm going to put a room together, thanks to Artwork Archive, of what I have that I think might apply, and I'll just send that to them and they'll get it. And you can send this in a text so that they can just link to it and look at what you got and decide which ones they want. But you've got to be working with a gallery at that point for that to really be effective. Because then you're sending art to the gallery that the gallery has already decided they want. You know, I've got a gallery in Montana that I've got to be very careful what I would send them, because it's mountains and it's greenery. And, you know, my paintings of the beaches of California are not going to sell well there, you see. So you've got to be in touch with your gallerist, you know, and say, well, this is what I have. You tell me what you want me to send you. I don't paint for my galleries. I paint for me. But what I send to the galleries is what the gallery chooses. You know what I'm saying?
It's curated.
It's different. Yeah. It's kind of like people ask me, well, do you paint for money? No, I do not paint for money. I paint for myself, but I sell for money. I sell my paintings for money, but I don't paint for money. I don't think about money. I don't worry about money. And it's not because I have money. It's because it's irrelevant to the art process. I can't come anywhere from my heart if it's about the money, because money just doesn't motivate me. That gets back to that whole commission thing. It's a nuisance, I know. For a lot of artists, it's very hard. I get it. It's hard. I was a starving artist in Boston. I couldn't sell any. Listen, I know what it's like. I was actually homeless for 3 nights waiting to raise enough money for my first month, last month in security deposit way back in the 80s. So I know what it's like to be broke, dirt broke. I smoked cigarettes because it killed my hunger. When I was smoking, I didn't have any appetite. It was easy to solve that problem. That was way back.
Now it's cheaper to eat.
Probably.
It's cheaper to eat now.
Good, as it should be.
Yes. So, wow, so much. And I know, I mean, we could talk all week and not even make a dent in the incredible experiences you've had. And this information is going to help so many people. I only have a couple questions left. Are you okay on time?
Oh, of course, I'm fine.
Thank you. And you've been so gracious. And it's such a pleasure. Like, my head almost exploded when I'm like, I've got to be able to speak to Mark on the show, and you were available. And I'm so grateful because your video. Okay, listeners, Mark's video, the particular one that I watched and studied from was The Golden Hour, is incredible.
Right.
And I got that video. Yeah, show it, please.
Well, this is the other one. I've got them both here.
Okay. They are terrific. And I got the specifically for me, I watched information about both of them. I was obsessed with Mark's teachings while I was painting my toddlers at the beach, because I thought, well, I've got to go to the guy who does this. And he's got these crystal clear paintings that just sparkle. It's very clear that you are inspired by Maxfield Parrish, and you take it to a whole nother level. The clarity in your paintings, I don't even know how to describe it. The light is so pure. It's like, I mean, I sound like an idiot, but
no, it makes sense. No, I understand. Well, with art,
they sparkle. You know,
the thing about painting is, like, it's really true what they say. A picture is worth 1,000 words. You know, that's why we paint. There was so much is being said in a painting. It's so many things.
Well, Mark's paintings achieve that so beautifully, but you've got to take a look at his work. You'll see it in the show notes, and the clarity and the light in these paintings is just awe-inspiring. So I would love for you to tell us what your biggest struggle is as an artist. Do you have any struggles?
Yes, I have struggles. Getting better. I struggle with getting better. I have a anguish when I'm in a, like I'm caught in, if I'm caught in a painting and I don't know how to resolve it.
Yes.
I just wish I was a better painter. I wish I could paint faster. I wish I could paint better. I wish I could solve problems easier. Like, one of the things that happened this past year, one of these events that I go to is I'll give you an example, the Laguna plein air.
Yes.
It's a signature paint out. It's the signature artist, and I'm one of the signature painters of the Laguna Plein Air Painters Association in California. And I went there and had a great, great time. It's so great. I don't know. How much time do you have? Do you have a few minutes?
For you, I've got all day.
Oh, well, I just want to tell you the story.
So, go for it.
So one of my gallerists, who happens to be a dear friend of mine, decided that we're going to stay in a cottage in Crystal Cove. And it's just going to be us, my wife, and another artist. And we're just going to spend a night, and I'm going to bring my guitar, and we're going to sing songs. We're going to have a great time. But this was in the middle of the Invitational. So it's a lot of fun, and we're going to be up until 2 in the morning, and then too much wine is going to be drunk. And then how am I going to be the next day? But I figured, well, I'm going to wake up. I'm going to be at Crystal Cove. Everything's going to be right there. It's the most beautiful beach in California, one of the prettiest. So we woke up in the morning, and I went out there. I was groggy headed, couldn't get enough coffee, and I couldn't see a painting. It's beautiful, but I just didn't see anything I wanted to paint. I didn't feel it. And I was far from the car, and I had all my gear, and I kind of felt committed that I had to paint somehow. I had to come up with something because this place is too beautiful, but I couldn't think of anything. And at some point I said to my wife, look, I got to get out of here. She was having a great day. She went up to the Shake Shack, hung out with the surfers, came down with like this beautiful, magnificent chocolate milkshake for me, which blew my mind. It was one of the best things I ever had in my life. Laguna Beach Shake Shack. Don't miss it if you're ever there.
That's right.
And so it was such an amazing experience. But then I said, okay, tomorrow when I go out, I got to go out clean. I got to go out and paint in the morning. I went out to Aliso Beach, and there's this famous keyhole. And
yes.
I took this, I don't know, 16 by 12 canvas. And I just got very private with myself, got into my own thing, took the walk. Always I have my coffee. I go out to the end of the beach, go to the keyhole, and I'm right there at the keyhole. And I whipped off. I say whipped off. Sometimes if you paint enough, one or two paintings will paint itself. It's like, oh my God, this thing just flew together.
That's a beautiful painting.
Oh, thank you. Know the one I'm talking about?
Yep.
I think it's on my website right now. So it came together. I won a couple of awards with it.
It's stunning.
It was just fantastic. And then I sold it right away. And then I got a note from OPA that I have to submit something to OPA. So OPA is going to select something. And I thought, what I'll do, this gets back to your other question, long answer. I decided to paint another one, but to kick it up to the next level. So I was going to do the keyhole painting, but do it over refreshed with a new energy. And I was going to put more detail in it. I was going to polish off certain parts that didn't get polished in the plein air event and have something a little more sophisticated for OPA. Well, don't tell OPA, but I worked so hard on this. Oh my God. And this gets back to your question. You're like, what is my struggle? My struggle is to be better. And I couldn't take that painting. I couldn't do much with it. I think I got a respectable, very respectable facsimile of what I had done before, but I don't feel like I kicked it up to something special. And in fact, it's probably not as energetic. The brush strokes don't have the same energy. Listen, I hope that OPA accepts it for the national show, but they may not. And if they don't, there's my struggle. The struggle is not to get into the OPA show. That's not the struggle. The struggle is I want to make my paintings better. That's more important to me than getting accepted into shows. I mean, I keep entering into this thing at one of these bold brush contests, you know, and I never win. I never win. I go to these other things and I win all kinds of awards. I've got a wall full of awards, but I can't win anything from bold brush. I don't know why. And I just shake my head. Do I care? No, of course not. That's not what's important. My struggle is, how do I get to be a better painter? How do I get to the point where I can look at a painting that I did in plein air and then do a studio version of it and have the studio version be even better? That's a really high bar. I don't know why it's such a high bar, but it is. It just doesn't come together like that. And also the other thing is, a lot of paintings that work really well at this size, they don't work well when you make them bigger, because you start realizing that all that little sky, the sky that was no problem in the design down here, becomes a big, big problem. The bigger the painting, the bigger the problems.
I've noticed that. I've noticed that there are a number of paintings that I have struggled with that I thought, you know, this would have been perfect 10 inches smaller. Mm-hmm. So I think size is definitely a factor in painting the right thing at the size that it works best at.
Right.
I always like to let my guests wrap up the show mm-hmm. and have the last word. And I would love for you to wrap us up with your best advice for becoming a successful artist.
Well, my best advice is to go back and listen to everything that I said today. Be the best artist you can be. That's the most important thing. Find out what you love to paint and get good at it. That's the most important thing. You know, that doesn't mean you can't paint flowers once in a while or do a snow scene. You should do as many different kinds of painting as you can to keep your hands, to keep challenging yourself. But find something that you love to paint and get good at it. And don't just get good at that. Try to expand your ability to paint other things. And keep exploring the world. I never knew that I would love painting in Bryce Canyon, Utah. I never knew that I'd love it. It turns out, you know, people think of me as a beach painter. I became well known for my children's books, which were about beaches and my grandmother's little hot dog stand. I never thought I would love painting in Utah so much, but oh my God, I can't wait to go back. I love painting those red rocks in the desert. And I would never have known that had I not explored the world and taken some chances and said yes and tried stuff. So I think it's one of the jobs of an artist is to go out and explore and learn things about yourself and put that into your art. Find out who you are and put that into your art and find the things you love. It's a love motivated life. And don't worry so much about the money or whether you're in galleries. Try not to think about that. Think about getting good at what you do. Because if your last name, whoever you are, doesn't mean anything, like people can't count on it, then you don't really have anything as an artist, as a profession. The word for that is branding. You know, you are your brand. And if you're no good at what you do, I mean, everyone listening to this podcast is good enough. You're good enough. That's not the question. Whether you're ready is the question. Not whether you're good enough, but whether you're ready. Anyone can learn and anyone can get better. And you're going to do great. You're going to get better. It's really just a matter of, are you ready for the next level? Are you ready for the next level? Are you ready for the next one? And so on. So you keep getting better. Don't worry about whether you're great or really good or, you know, be the best that you can be. That's the key. Just try to keep getting better at it. I think there were some contradictions in there. You can just edit that out.
This wraps up my chat with painter and multi-passionate creative, Mark Sciascia. Remember to check out the show notes for the full video of this interview, a slideshow of Mark's work, and links to Mark's website and fantastic instructional videos at passionatepainterpodcast.com/episode91. I hope you'll join me back here in a few weeks. I'm not sure yet who'll be in the hot seat, as I've got several invitations in the works with fabulous guests I can't wait to share with you. So at this point, it'll be a surprise to both of us. Don't forget to join my podcast Insider Circle for free downloadable ebooks, cheat sheets, and checklists exclusively for my podcast insiders and students. You'll also receive a reusable coupon for the lowest price available on all of my self-paced online courses. Sign up for free in the sidebar at passionatepainterpodcast.com.
Until next time, go make something.